The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 409. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, this will be the last episode for 2023, as I'm going to take the next couple weeks off to spend the holidays with friends and family. I will return in January, in fact, the very first Thursday in January, which I believe is the 4th, but I'm looking forward to taking a little bit of a break to spend some time with some family and friends and enjoy the holiday season. Since this is going to be the last episode for the year, I'm going out with a bang. In fact, this episode is so big, it has two guests. The first guest that I would like to talk about is going to be kind of joining me as a tag team partner, so to speak. Gino Cuddy is the first guest that I'd like to talk about. Now, he is a longtime fan of the Universal Wrestling Federation. Now, the Herb Abrams version of like the 1990, 91, 92. And he's got a unique project that he's working on featuring some footage from the UWF. And I know Gino from Matt Talk, my other podcast, where he is frequently keeping tabs on the show and leaving us comments and whatnot. And so I reached out to him because I am obviously following him on his social media, and I saw that he's working on this UWF project. And because of that, he encouraged me to reach out to our main event guest, if you will, Mr. Sonny Beach. That's right. Wrestling superstar who spent many, many, many years wrestling in the WWF, the UWF, All Japan, Stampede, the Independents, did some time in Global as well. A man that, as he says, spent almost 40 years in the biz of professional wrestling. And I am so excited to talk to Sonny Beach and to find out about his career. As I will admit, I did not know he was in Stampede or All Japan. So I learned some stuff listening to him talk about his career and sharing stories. And it's a awesome episode, and thank you, Gino, for encouraging me to reach out, and thanks for coming on as well and being a co-host, so to speak. So with that, I'm going to jump into that conversation with Sonny Beach in just a moment, but I have to, at least one more time for the calendar year, thank a great sponsor of the PVD Cast, and of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. Hey, maybe you need some last-minute gift ideas for the holidays. Well, stop on over to World's Greatest Comics and pick up something. They have everything for the comic book fan in your life. They got single issues. They got graphic novels. They've got collections, trade paperbacks, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, toys, various collectibles, posters. They got a great pool system, a friendly staff. Man, oh man, it's like the Taj Mahal of comic book stores. So if you're in Ohio, especially Central Ohio, you owe it to yourself to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can check them out online if it's more convenient for you. WGComics.com is their website, and they're very active on their Facebook page, which is at WGComics. And I'd like to thank one more time all the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics for being a sponsor of the PVD Cast. It means the world to me, and I truly, truly do appreciate it. All right, with that being said, then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, Gino Cuddy and myself are going to sit down and chat with Sonny Beach. Ooh. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, I am joined by a very special co-host, Mr. Gino Cuddy. Gino, how are you?
Doing really well, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, and thanks for joining me on this episode as we close out 2023. And of course, the guest, I'm keeping you all in suspense. Our guest for this episode of the PBD Cast is none other than UWF great wrestler extraordinaire, Mr. Sonny Beach. Sonny, how are you?
Hey, great, John. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm going to ask, how did you get started in this wacky business of professional wrestling?
Well, I was a big fan growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, back in the 70s and 80s. And when I weaned myself off of cartoons when I was a young boy, I just fell in love with wrestling, pro wrestling, championship wrestling from Florida. Once in a while, I would get some IWA shows. And then I would see, you know, once cable came out, you know, I'd get once in a while, we'd get some WWF shows down there, you know, from the Garden or from, I guess back then it was either Allentown or wherever in Washington, D.C. they were filming out of. So I would, you know, see some of that shows. But I fell in love with Dusty Rhodes and, you know, Mike Graham, Steve Kern, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, all those guys, you know, I just fell in love with the baby faces and I love the heels too. You know, Ox Baker was a big heel. Stan Hansen, back in old Georgia Championship days, Ole and Arn Anderson, the Assassins, Killer Carl Cox, the Funk Brothers. I mean, it was just, a hotbed of wrestling back when I was growing up in Jacksonville, Florida. And every Thursday night, they would have wrestling at the Coliseum. And I was fortunate enough to have my parents take me to a lot of these matches growing up as a kid. And then when I was old enough in high school, I would drive myself to the matches and I'd try to hang out in the back and meet the guys or find out where they were staying or find out what airport they were flying into and, you know, shuttle them back and forth to the matches. So I got my, you know, foot in the door a little bit that way when I was younger growing up.
Well, and you were a pretty good athlete in high school, correct? I mean, you did football, you were on the wrestling team, track and field as well?
Oh, yeah. I did all, you know, athletics. I played Little League Baseball, and I played varsity football for 3 years at Terry Parker High School. I was on the wrestling team for 2 years. I was all-city, all-state in wrestling. So, I mean, I got a lot of college offers to play football in college and wrestle in college and stuff, but I just gravitated to pro wrestling, and right out of, high school, I started training to be a wrestler down in Jacksonville, Florida. There was a bunch of independent guys down there. This guy, Mike Prather or Mike Thor, he was on Georgia Championship Wrestling a lot as an enhancement talent, and he was doing a lot of outlaw little shows around Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and he got me in touch with some people, and we would go down to different places to wrestle, you know, once I first broke in. It took me about 6 months to break in. Don Curtis, superstar Don Curtis, he was from, he used to call him the Buffalo Bomber, but he's the one that really helped me get into the pro wrestling business. I went to high school with his daughter, Lisa Curtis. And, you know, he gave me some, you know, he always told me, he goes, go get an education, go to college. And after you get out of college, if you still want to wrestle, I'll send you in the right direction. Or I'll put you in the right path. But I didn't really want to go to college. I wanted to be a pro wrestler my whole life. I grew up in public sixth grade, that's what I wanted to do. And I, you know, tried to stay on that, you know, course. I was going to either be a pro wrestler or I was going to be a police officer. So it was one of those two things that I really gravitated to, law enforcement or you know, wrestling, sports, entertainment. Back when I wrestled, it was a golden era wrestling. I mean, I used to have to set up rings. I used to have to pay, you know, back then we had to pay our dues still. And, you know, it wasn't, you weren't getting a free ticket like most of these guys get today. And just, you know, because you look good at the gym and you know somebody, you know, you get pulled right in and, you know, you go to school or a camp for a couple of months. And then, you know, next thing you're on TV, you know, and they're putting you over. But, you know, we had to pay dues and you had to work the circuit and you had to drive people around. You had to set up the rings, break down the rings, learn how to referee. I mean, I did all those things, you know, when I first started out, you know, and it was a learning experience. And, you know, back then you used to keep your mouth shut. You go around to everybody and introduce yourself in the dressing room, shake everybody's hand, you know, hey, my name's, you know, Sonny Beach. How are you? You know, nice to meet you. Or know, good to see you. You go all the way around the dressing room from the top guy to the bottom guy, you know, and you know, when the guys, older guys were talking, you sit back, you listen, and you wouldn't put your, you know, your foot in your mouth, or you wouldn't interject until, you know, you were asked to, or, you know, and you wouldn't tell somebody, you know, you're going to go over and this is how I'm going to go over. This is my finish. You know, you'd, you know, a lot of times we would call stuff in the ring, you know, you do a few spots and stuff, you know, in the back, or, you know, call it, but, you know, and you know when the finish was, and you know when to go home and everything else. But nowadays, and the whole business has changed, where they have creative people writing, you know, finishes for you that never step foot in the ring, and you got other people creating your own promos. You can't even ad lib, but do your own promos, or, you know, talk on the microphone. Everything's got to be, you know, the way the creative team wants it now. So I don't see any, you know, really glory in that anymore.
I totally agree. You know, it's a shame that wrestling is sort of done by, I guess you would say, by committee these days. There's really nothing really created, I guess you could say, organically. Everything's sort of manufactured now. And, you know, that's why I appreciate, you know, the wrestling of, you know, the olden times, or, you know, the glory days, you know, because everything was created organically. The wrestlers were allowed creative freedom, and you know, they could be themselves, and they didn't have to be pigeonholed to what, say, a promoter wanted or whatever. That's why, and I guess we'll get into this a little later, that's why, you know, promoters like Herb Abrams and such, he gave, like, Mick Foley a lot more freedom than he had in any of the other promotions, and that's where he really began to blossom.
Yeah, like Mick, you know, we would discuss this a lot. We'd talk and stuff, and, you know, Mick was, you know, trying to get to the next level, and when he left Texas and stuff, and he did that little one run with WCW, came back, and he started wrestling with Herb, and, you know, he started to, you know, come into his own then. You know, we would try a lot more stuff in and out of the ring, and then, you know, and we would call a lot of stuff out there when we were just, you know, ad-libbing and, you know, having good matches, you know, great matches. And, you know, he helped me get to where I needed to be in the business. And, you know, still, you know, every match you learn something new. It's not like, you know, you get stale or nothing. And with Herb, he would give you that creative freedom to, you know, express yourself. And, you know, as long as it looked good and, you know, helped draw money and you became relevant, you know, that's what, you know, you wanted to get yourself over. You know, he gave us the opportunity to get ourselves over, you know, and that's what we tried to do.
Sonny, one of the first programs that you had when you went to the WWE in 1988 was with Cowboy Scott Casey. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I wrestled Scott probably about 20 or 30 times when I was with the WWF. And, you know, we'd go to different towns, and it was pretty much, you know, the same thing in different towns. You know, the finishes might be different or whatever. But, you know, that's how you learn, too. They put you with an experienced veteran. And, you know, I was wrestling a lot of independents before I came to WWF. And when I did the movie No Holds Barred, they brought me in and they put me to work right away, right after the movie. So I didn't have any time after the movie to, you know, go back, work out, do anything. You know, it was just, you know, they threw me right in the program and the ring and gave me a booking sheet and said, okay, this is where I needed to be, you know, and this is, you know, you're working, you know, 14 days on, 3 days off, 15 days on, 2 days off. You know, back then we were running 2-3 towns a night with the WWF. See, they put me a lot with Lanny Poffo before he was a genius. You know, they were just, you know, it was Leaping Lanny back then. He was throwing out frisbees, you know, so, before he was a genius character. But me, Lanny, they would put me a lot with SD Jones, Special Delivery Jones. I got to work with, you know, some of the best guys in the business to learn from. I got to travel with a lot of great guys too: Hercules Hernandez, Barry Horowitz, Jose Luis Rivera, and Jose Estrada, that when they were the Conquistadors. I traveled with them a lot, Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zukov. You know, I worked, you know, traveled with those guys a lot too. And, you know, it was a, back then it was more of a family. You know, we took care of each other. We'd look out for each other. So, you know, it was all pretty good stuff.
Did you ever work with Iron Mike Sharp at all? And
I tagged a lot with Mike. You know, a lot of TV tapings we would tag together. Once in a while I tagged with Nikolai. Once in a while I tagged with Boris or Barry Horowitz. You know, they had me more of a heel when I was with the WWF than a baby face. But, you know, I got to work with some of the greats in the business. I mean, back when I was with Peach State Wrestling, I got to work a lot with Abdul the Butcher, Tommy Wildfire Rich, Ted Oates. Back then, Rob Van Dam was coming up there, Billy Black, Kamala too, Ben Peacock, a lot of these guys, you know, Georgia boys, you know, and everybody was pretty much starting out around the same time. Ray Lloyd Glacier, before he was Glacier, I brought him into business and got him a little extra role in No Holds Barred with us when we were in Atlanta. And then he got to go to the, you know, WCW. He was working out at a power plant there and made friends with DDP and with Eric Bischoff. And that's how he got his little push down in WCW. And he's done very well for himself, too. He does a lot of, you know, autograph signings and shows up here in New York and all over the place. And they're doing, they just did a little wrestling movie, and it should be released pretty soon. I guess they're just waiting for the dates and the release dates and the marketing end of it to promote the new movie. So I'm not in it, but Stan Hansen is in it, Haku, Larry Zbysko, Ernest Miller, the Gangrel, a list of, you know, guys that goes on and on. A bunch of guys got together down in Florida and shot for about 6 weeks. And I think I don't know what it's called. It's almost like a Wild Bunch, like a wrestlers versus aliens. And it's a pretty cool story. So I don't know when the release date is on that.
Here's two places I never knew, Sonny, that you worked until, you know, I was doing some research. I never knew that you went to Stampede and that you went to All Japan. So
yes.
Could you talk about the experiences of going to Canada and then going clear across the world to go to Japan to compete in All Japan?
Well, when I was with the WWF, I got to be good friends with Owen Hart, and we'd always talk, and I said, I'd love to come work for Stampede. You know, eventually, you know, it's one of the last territories. Because, you know, back then, I guess it was 89, 90. I wrestled with WWF like 88, 89, 90, and some of 91. But I went up to Calgary, I think, in 90, if I'm not mistaken. 89 or 90, sometime around there. But I think it was 89 and 90. I went up there, and I went for a couple months, and Owen got me booked up there. And I went up there from Jacksonville, Florida, after I left WWF the first time. They were going to do a program with me and Brian Pillman. And Brian was coming back up there before he went to WCW. So we had everything lined up and everything. And then, you know, it was just freezing cold up there. Going from Jacksonville, Florida, when it's, you know, pretty much 80, 90 degrees most of the year. And then you're going up in January and February over to Calgary, and when it's like 30 below zero up there, it's not a really good place for a beach boy like me to be at. So I hated it up in Calgary. I mean, I liked the territory. I liked the guys I was working with back then. Larry Cameron was there. Don Morocco was in and out of there. After he left WWF a little bit, Randy Cauley, one of the original Moondogs, was up there when I was there. Back then they had Beef Wellington. Steve Blackman was just starting out up there. Chris Benoit was there. Muck and Singh, I guess that was Mike Shaw, the Norman character when he came, and I guess Bastion Booger when he was with WWF, he was up there then. And we had a ton of great wrestlers up there. Bruce Hart was still wrestling. Him and Brian Pillman were Bad Company for a while. And the Bulldogs were in and out of there. You know, when they weren't with Vince, they would work there. Davey and Tommy, they'd, you know, do their thing. And then when I came up there, I guess Tommy was going to be the booker up there. Because he already left Vince, you know, when he had the problem with the Rougeaus and everything. And I guess, you know, his back was still bothering him and he wanted to take some time off. So he went back to Calgary. He was living in Calgary. So I was up there for about 2 months, and it just didn't work out for me because it was just too cold, number one. Number two, the vans would be breaking down all the time. I would have to take like Trailways buses or Greyhound buses back. Like one time the van broke down, we were all the way up in Edmonton, Alberta. We had to take a Trailways bus back to Calgary, and the road conditions were terrible. I would have dreams that I would die in like a car accident up there, or, you know, sliding off the road, or, you know, like freezing to death because it was that cold up there. And I didn't really have the proper, you know, clothes when I first got there. I had, you know, a regular winter jacket, but you needed like, you know, down, and you needed like thermals, and I had to go to the store and buy thermals and the wool socks. And I spent all my first 2 weeks pay on buying, you know, warm clothes up there, and, you know, and feeding myself. And then we were staying at this York Hotel. It was like a dive hotel. I mean, it was like a cheap hotel, and they had a strip club in the basement, you know, and all the guys would go there after the matches or after they'd work out at the gym or whatever and hang out with the strippers or hang out, you know, meet, you know, just there wasn't nothing to really do up there because it was so cold. And I didn't have a car or anything to get around in. So I relied on, you know, public transportation, or I will walk everywhere I go or jump and get a ride with one of the referees or the guys to the shows or whatever. So it was, they'd have a van, you know, they meet up at a certain place, or they pick us up at the York Hotel and they take us a lot of times, but it just wasn't a very good territory at the end, you know, when I was up there. So I had some good matches up there when I was there. I wrestled Chris Benoit for the Commonwealth title up there in his hometown of Edmonton. And we went like almost a half hour, you know, and it was a great match. I wish I would have had that on film. And I don't know if there's any film of it up there, but I know that that would have been something that I would have really loved to see. And a couple of TV tapings, you know, I wrestled the Power Twins up there, Larry and Dave Sontag. They were up there at the time when we were in Canada, and they had a big band, and sometimes I'd ride around with them up there. But back then, you know, it was still kayfabe about, you know, you weren't riding around with the heels. Up in Calgary, I was a babyface. So, you know, it worked out pretty good, you know, the matches, but just the weather conditions up there at the time I was there wasn't very favorable, or I didn't really like it. But Japan, Stan Hansen got me booked in Japan, All Japan, for somebody got hurt and they pulled out of a tournament in 91. It was a World Tag League tournament. Teamed me with Johnny Ace when I was up there. Johnny was over really big in Japan at the time, and they figured I'd be a great partner with him, almost like a dynamic dude type of partnership like him and Shane Douglas had. So I came in there with my beach gimmick, and the Japanese people loved it, and I got over really big the first time I was there. And that was in, I think it was November and December of 91, I was there in Japan for like a five-week tour. And I got to wrestle all the big names over there in Japan. Andre the Giant Baba were a tag team in the tournament. Masawa, Kawada, Kabashi, Kikuchi, who was it? Tawe and Jumbo Tsuruta were a tag team. Dory Funk Jr. and Al Perez were a tag team. The Destroyer was up there, and he was working more singles and stuff, but he would tag a little bit. Abdullah Butcher and Kamala were a tag team. British Bulldog and Johnny Smith were a tag team. And who else was there? The Renegade Warriors,
Were they the Youngblood brothers?
Yeah, the Youngbloods, Chris and Mark Youngblood, they were there. I'm trying to think who else was there in that tournament. Doug Furness and Dan Crawford, Terry Gordy and Steve Williams were tagged over there. So it was like, you know, you're wrestling some of the best guys' names in the business, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had great matches over there, and I got over really strong, and they loved us over there. And I got invited back for the Summer Action Series. They put me with Del Wilkes, the Patriot. We were a tag team over there for that tour. And we got over bigger than me and Johnny Ace did. You know, Patriots wearing the, you know, mask, and I'm doing the Beach Boy, All-American Beach Boy type gimmick, and they just went crazy for us over there. And I don't know what happened. I was only there for a couple of tours, and then I never went back. But I got over really big over there, Stanson. They loved my work, and I thought I would get more work when I came back to the States after coming back out of Japan, but that's when Herb started back up again. And I dedicated more of my time to Herb because he was based out of New York at the time. And that's when we started doing a lot of the Sports Channel America stuff and Blackjack Brawl, Beach Brawl, all that stuff came about while he was in New York.
Now, how did you first meet Herb Abrams, and when did you start working for him?
Well, I met Herb at John Arizzi's wrestling convention when he had it over at the Ramada Inn over in Queens, New York, over by LaGuardia Hotel over there, back where they do like the big events and stuff now. Well, he had a wrestling show there, and he brought back so many superstars for this big convention. Mick Foley was there, myself, the Power Twins. He brought in Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Woman, Kevin Sullivan. He had Kilo Kowalski there, Captain Lou Albano, Bruno Sammartino, Ivan Koloff. I think superstar Billy Graham might have been there. I mean, he brought back so many champions, Bob Backlund. It was one of the biggest wrestling conventions ever at the time. And nobody ever really started doing conventions until John Arizzi did. You know, the old timers, meet and greets, all that stuff. And then he had some live matches there too at the time. So it was pretty good. That's where I met Herb, and Herb was saying, oh, we're going to do talent. We're going to do this. And Bruno told, I actually knew Bruno when I was with the WWF. So Bruno told him, you know, hey, this kid, Sandy Beach, you know, they were still calling me Sandy Beach at the time. That's when I first started the WWF as Sandy Beach. But a DJ down in Florida had a name trademarked, and he told sent me a cease and desist since I was on TV every week with the WWF. And I had to change my name, so I just changed it to Sunny Beach. But that's how I met Herb at the wrestling convention in, you know, in Queens, New York at the time. And he says, I'm going to be doing shows. I'm going to use you. That's where he met the Power Twins at the convention. And John Arizzi was doing some of his, like, leg work and had him on his talk show, you know, Pro Wrestling Spotlight show up here in Long Island, New York. He would have Herb on there, and then I would come on there. The Twins would come on, Mick Foley. So we were promoting the business for him in New York before he even came to New York. So that's when I helped him get the Pennsylvania Hotel as a place to do the TV tapings out of. I knew one of the general managers there at the hotel at the time. And we got him in there, and he started doing shows there. And then the rest is history.
Now, the Hotel Pennsylvania, I mean, that people, you know, need a, here's a little geography lesson for you. That was right across the street from Madison Square Garden, correct?
Oh yeah, right directly across the street from there.
So that was a pretty big get for the UWF at the time. And if I remember correctly, the first UWF show, at least the first television taping that took place at the Hotel Pennsylvania, then I believe called the Penta Hotel, had so many people there, and not even just, you know, in ring. I mean, you had Greg Valentine wrestling, I believe his first and only match for the company there. And you also had in like the audience, you had Killer Kowalski, you had Nikolai Volkoff, and you also had, of all people, Rick Rude in the audience. And I believe that Herb was trying to get a angle going with Rick Rude and Paul Orndorff. And on the other side of the coin, he was trying to get an angle going with Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine. But unfortunately, I guess due to WWF interference, those two angles never came to fruition.
Exactly. And he even had, believe it or not, he had Andre the Giant on a couple of his shows, you know. And it Herb, if he had more money and if he had more people that were guiding him in a better way, instead of only trying to take his money and look out for their own self for selfish reasons, he could have done a lot better, you know, with his business, the UWF. But a lot of people sabotage it from day one, and they were trying to, you know, I guess get themselves over and shake them down for more money, and, you know, just to book their own friends and stuff like that. Some of the people that were doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes for Herb.
Who came up with the idea of the tag team of you and Steve Ray? Was that something Herb concocted, or was that something that both Steve and you were like, oh, let's be a tag team? Like, how did that happen?
I think it was like Herb's idea, because he liked both of us, and he says, you guys would be great together. And, you know, and both, you know, the fans kind of liked it too, you know. And he would listen to people. And there was a lady, Georgia Ann Metropolis, and she had her wrestling chatterbox, like almost like, you know, like a newsletter and stuff she would put out every week and stuff like that. And she was very good friends with Bruno Sammartino and stuff. And Bruno liked the idea too, and they ran with it. They go, oh, two young baby faces, you know, tag team. You need a baby face tag team here, and, you know, to get over, and, you know, and it's better to make your own stars, you know, instead of rehashing the same people from WWF or somebody leaves a territory, bringing them in. Use your own people, and, you know, and I was here. Steve was in Kansas City, and he'd fly Steve in, and, you know, we'd do all kinds of stuff, and we'd work a lot of shows together. But that never really came full circle, because Herb thought that Steve was having an affair with his wife or something like that. So he kind of got rid of Steve after a little while, and then he brought him back, but after he got divorced, I think. But, you know, it kind of like ruined the tag team for a little bit, you know. But that was the, you know, some of the truth behind it. And then they said that was, you know, one of the reasons why Herb booked Steve Williams with Steve Ray, to teach him a lesson. And that's why they had that little shoot thing in the ring where, you know, Steve Ray had a bloody nose, and, you know, Steve Williams kind of tightened him up a little bit in the ring.
I think another thing that unfortunately sort of stopped the tag team dead in its tracks was the fact that you guys were looking to expand far beyond the UWF. I mean, you had also had a bit of a stint in a Global Wrestling Federation down, I believe, in Texas.
Well, I was good. Bill Pedicino in Texas, he was doing the color commentator and play-by-play down there, and Joe wanted me to come in there and, you know, start with the Global right away, you know, as a singles wrestler. And I was going to do that, but then, you know, they saw they had the tag team tournament, and I, you know, Steve asked me, hey, could you get us booked somewhere? We can maybe do some stuff, you know, there, Puerto Rico. And ever since Bruiser Brody got killed down there, you know, I didn't want to go back to Puerto Rico. A lot of the wrestlers didn't want to go back to Puerto Rico. Tony Atlas, one of them, Stan Hansen, you know, a lot of these guys just said, no, I'm not going back. You know, they don't look after the boys down there. They killed one of the boys. And, you know, they don't know how to do business. So that's what, you know, a lot of guys were saying. I really didn't want to go there. But, you know, we had some opportunities to go different places. We were talking with WCW. Kevin Sullivan was booking. I was sending some tapes and pictures and stuff down there and talking back and forth with them about, because I never really wrestled at WCW at the time. So they were still pretty big, and they were going up against WWF and, you know, that Attitude Era, that angle they were doing, you know, Monday Nitro Wars and Monday Night Raw Wars and all that. So I could have probably came in for that with WCW, but I went down to Global, and then Herb called down there, had a lawyer call down there and said we were under contract with them, which was a lie. We never signed a contract with Herb, so we were pretty much independent contractors. We could go wherever we wanted, or at least I knew I could. Because I know I didn't have a signed contract with them. You know, I went down to Global. We did a couple of tapings down there, and they couldn't show some of them because Herb had a lawyer send a letter down there saying, which was totally bullshit and it was nonsense, but, you know, he wanted to keep us with him at UWF and he didn't want us to wrestle anywhere else, but he wasn't doing enough shows to help us, you know, feed our family or pay us properly. So we, you know, I had to go do, you know, independence and do other things too, but ever since then, you know, and I told Herb, I said, show me a contract, and he could never produce it. And I said, I never signed anything, so I could wrestle wherever I want. I said, no hard feelings, but I got a family to feed, and I'm not feeding it with what the dates you're giving me, you know, two or three shows in a 4 or 5 month period. It's not going to pay the bills, you know.
Herb had sort of a, pardon me, I guess you would say a bad habit of scheduling shows and then canceling shows.
Yeah, of course. And I helped him book. Like, I used to run a lot of my shows in the New York area. I had my promoter's license, and I could promote, and I could do stuff. And, you know, I did a lot of independent shows up here before Herb, and, you know, and I'd have, you know, a lot of WWF guys on the show. Mick Foley, I'd have Orndorff, I'd have Mike Sharp, Conquistadors, Barry Horowitz, Tony Atlas. I mean, I had Greg Valentine, Kamala. I mean, I had some of the best talent, you know, that wasn't with WWF, and they were like WWF shows. So I would have, you know, 1,500 people at a Jewish community center in Staten Island, you know, a couple of times. You know, I've wrestled, me and Paul Orndorff wrestled Kamala 1 and 2 there. And then I wrestled one night there, and me and Mick Foley were in a big brawl over there at the Jewish community center. And it's still being played on public access television over in Staten Island. One of my friends called me up last week and told me that they watched something on PBS over there. Me and we were calling it, you know, championship, all-star championship wrestling. And, you know, and then the other time I let Herb, we used his, you know, UWF as a call, you know, a sponsored show, but I sold the show and, you know, I booked everything, but made Herb look like he was doing shows still. So that's the one with me and Orndorff and me and Kamala and stuff. Then we'd have Greg Valentine, Mike Sharp, Conquistadors, the Power Twins, Skull Von Crush, which is Big Vito, against Barry Horowitz. You know, you got a Jewish boy at a Jewish community center wrestling Skull Von Crush, a German. So, you know, there was a little bit of heat there, you know, and it was a pretty good angle. But, you know, we didn't have TV to tell a story or anything. So, you know, you just had to put posters out and, you know, and we did a couple of autograph shows at a couple of the bowling alleys around there to promote the shows and a couple of sports memorabilia places. You know, we'd come there on Saturday, sign autographs. I'd try to sell some tickets and stuff. So it worked out pretty good for us. And I had good shows. So that's, you know, how I got to work with Herb a lot. And then I became good friends with him. And then, you know, then when he passed away, I was at his funeral and helped bury him and those with his family and stuff. I'm still very close with his family, with his sister Hildy and with his cousin Steve Simon. So
Well, as we're starting to get close to the time limit here, Sonny, don't want to keep you too long, but I have a two questions real quick, and I know Gino probably has a couple left as well. Who would you say is your favorite opponents to be in the ring with?
Well, I've always loved working with Mick Foley. He was great to work with. Another guy that I had a great time working with was Adrian Street down in Georgia. Learned a lot from him. Stan, he taught me a lot, a big mentor, Hansen. When I was in Japan and when I was No Holds Barred, the movie set, we were hanging out. We became good friends back in 1988. We're still friends. He comes to my house and stays here with me. And his wife comes and my wife, they're very good friends. And I'm probably going to go out to Colorado and Grand Junction where he lives this year to visit with him out there. So, you know, he's always welcome in my home. I'm welcome at his home. And, you know, we have that type of friendship. And, you know, who would have thought I'd be great friends with Stan Hansen, you know, in this business, you know, the guy that broke Bruno Sammartino's neck. those guys I've had great matches with. You know, I used to love working with Cheetah Kid, Ted Petty. He was a great guy to work with. Even Johnny Grunge when they were Public Enemy. You know, Mike Durham. I love working with those guys. I had, you know, a couple of great matches with Chris Benoit, you know, when he was alive. So, I mean, pretty much I've loved working with, you know, pretty much everybody that I've been in the ring with. I mean, you know, I always looked at it as a business. You know, you take care of business, the business will take care of you. And I'm very proud. I've never hurt anybody in the ring. And, you know, and it's all about taking care of your opponent, you know, and that's the first thing I was taught, you know, when I was starting out, you know, always take care of your opponent and always come to work on time. And, you know, that was pretty much it. You know, always make your shots. If you book somewhere, always, you know, make your bookings. And, you know, I was taught old school. You know, some of these guys, you know, they don't care if they miss or double book themselves. If they miss a show, they might come to work high or drunk, or they might hurt somebody in the ring. So I take great pride in never hurting anybody, never missing any shots and shows or anything. To answer your question, I've got several favorite. I can't just name just one favorite opponent. You know, everybody's different, and I've had great matches with everybody, and that's about it.
Of all the matches that you've wrestled in your entire career, be it UWF, Stampede, All Japan, WWF, what would you say is your favorite match of your entire career?
Wow. I've got a couple of them. Well, wrestling British Bulldog in his farewell, you know, his retirement match at Budokan Hall in Japan was, you know, a very favorite, one of my favorite matches. Out of all the territories, I probably love wrestling Japan, probably the best out of everywhere. My least favorite territory would probably be, I don't know if it was a territory, but I went on an overseas tour to Pakistan. And I was in Karachi, Multan, Lahore, and Islamabad, and very hot over there, too. It was a lot of times it was over 100 degrees, and we were wrestling a lot of outside shows and soccer arenas and stuff like that for 20, 30,000 people, and the food was terrible there, and the conditions, the hotel conditions. We stayed at a couple, you know, five-star hotels, Pearl Intercontinental Hotels. We would stay at those, but then we stayed at a couple little, you know, rink-a-dink little like Motel Sixes over there, I guess, to accommodate, you know, us. And we would have like armed guards, like military people guarding our hotels and the floors of our hotel rooms because of you know, the conditions over there at the time. So that was probably one of the least places I did like wrestling in. And then Stampede, because it was so cold up there. Not that it was a bad promotion to work for, it was just the weather conditions up there. I mean, it was just freezing, and I don't know how people up in Canada could live through those conditions, 20, 30 degrees below zero for weeks at a time. I mean, it's somewhere where I don't really want to be. I don't like the cold weather, to be honest with you. And then Texas was nice. I got to wrestle in the Sportatorium in Dallas. That was a huge thing. Madison Square Garden, first time I wrestled there, wrestled Scott Casey. That was a memorable, you know, everybody says if you ever make it to Madison Square Garden in anything, whether if you're a musician, whether you're an athlete, basketball player, hockey player, wrestler, boxer, you know, that's the place you want to be. And that's when, you know, you really achieved, you know, your boyhood dream, you know, like, when I was a kid watching Dusty Rhodes on Saturday mornings, and I said, wow, wish I could wrestle in the Sportatorium. I got to wrestle in the Sportatorium when I was 21 years old starting out. Yeah, I had to, you know, put people over and pay my dues and do jobs and, you know, enhance my talent. But I got to wrestle some of the biggest names in the business down there, Kevin Sullivan, Bob Roop. You know, the list goes on and on. The Sheep Herders back before they were the Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch. Then I wrestled Ray Candy. I wrestled Dory Funk. I mean, I got to wrestle some of the biggest names down there. And I enjoyed it, you know. And, yeah, I put people over, Rip the Cripple Oliver, who broke my leg on TV one time, you know, as a work, you know, not as a shoot. But, you know, and, you know, it's just all these memories that you had over, you know, I'm 60 years old now. So I've been, you know, I guess I've been in and around the wrestling business since I was 20 years old. So 40 years I've been in the wrestling business. And yeah, I've been retired. I haven't been in the ring since 2000, but I still go to, you know, functions. Tommy Fierro gave me a independent Lifetime Achievement Award for pro wrestling a couple of years ago for his promotion down there in New Jersey. And, you know, I got to travel the world for free and meet a lot of cool people and nice people. And I got some great fans that still write me and send me pictures and on the internet, you know, say kind things about me. And I saw your match. You did this. You did that. Oh, you signed some autographs for me and my family. You stayed and talked to my son. You know, that goes a long way for me, you know. No, it was about, you know, the friendships you build, the relationships. And, you know, all the old time wrestlers would say it's not how much money you make. It's how much money you keep, you know, or save. And that was one of the best words of wisdom I ever had. Johnny Walker, Mr. Wrestling number two, used to tell me when I first started out down at Peach State Wrestling, back when I was, like, I would wrestle Peach State, Florida Championship, and then I would drive up to Atlanta and do, like, Southern Championship for Jerry Blackwell. And Wrestling Two told me, he says, Beach, he goes, you might meet 2,000 wrestlers in your lifetime in this business. He goes, but count on one hand how many good friends you're going to have when you retire. And his words never rang truer than, you know, after you get out of the business. You know, I still talk to about 10, 15, you know, wrestlers that I know very well that are, I consider very good friends. The Bray Lloyd's one of them. Stan Hansen's one of them. Jose Luis Rivera, Jose Estrada. You know, there's a ton of guys. Tony Atlas, the Power Twins, Skull, Vito, Big Vito. So, I mean, I talk to people constantly, you know. They call me up, they check in on me, how you doing, how you feeling, you know, and I check up on them. But, you know, Wrestling 2 was right. You only have a handful of good friends in this business.
And I must say that one of my favorite matches of yours was you and Steve Ray versus Cowboy Bob Orton and Cactus Jack at Beach Brawl. And right. With John Tola suspended 50 feet in the cage. And seeing you and Steve Ray win over Bob Orton and Cactus Jack was one of my favorite experiences of that whole event. And I actually had the pleasure of walking through the Manatee Civic Center, now the Bradenton Convention Center, last year in Florida. And it was such an emotional experience for me walking through that building and realizing all the legends that were in that building that night. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, I had friends who wrestled in this, I'm friends with people who wrestled in this building, brought a whole new level of respect, that, you know, for me. And I just want to say right here that I want to appreciate that. I appreciate you, the Steve Ray, the family of Herb Abrams and Josh Duge, who is Lenny Duge's son.
Great guy. His health isn't the best right now, but without Lenny Duke, there would have been no UWF. I can tell you that right now. He was a driving force behind the TVs and the editing of all the tapes and the shows. And, you know, he would, you know, keep the guys, you know, on their toes. You know, he was always, you know, there. And he did a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that nobody really saw. But I saw it, and I appreciated Lenny, and still appreciate him. And his son, Josh, you know, he's looking out for him out there in California. So, you know, I want to give a big shout out to Lenny Duke and his family, a good people. And, you know, if he had 10 Lenny Dukes, UWF would have been very successful. They had one and they were successful, but, you know, a lot of timing and some of the, you know, money issues and a lot of Herb's partying and stuff, you know, that caused the demise of the UWF. But to his credit, he assembled some of the best talent in the world to work for him, and everybody liked him. I don't think there was too many people that didn't like him, unless he bounced a check to him, but he probably didn't do it on purpose. It was just, you know, something that happened. But he definitely tried his best, and if he would have had a little bit more money behind him and a few more people in the right places, I think he would have succeeded very well in what he was trying to accomplish.
Now, my last two questions, because I know John wants to wrap this thing up here, but two of my last questions, I guess, would be, A, do you still talk to Steve Ray? And B, is there any plans of a Steve Ray and Sunny Beach Wet and Wild reunion signing?
Well, yeah, I still talk to Steve once in a while. He's got his life going on in Kansas City. I got mine up here. I have a security guard company. I have a security guard training school. I'm married. I have three grandchildren out here. Two out in Long Island. I have four, really, and I got two more in Staten Island. So, being a grandparent is a great, great thing, and I get to see my grandchildren a lot now. And I'm kind of semi-retired, so I just teach a few times a month. I try to help my son with the business because I'm pretty much leaving my security business to my son, Austin. And then Steve, I mean, he's doing a ton of stuff out in Kansas City. He's trying to do some stuff with the UWF, trying to bring it back. And I gave him my blessing. I just don't have time, or, you know, I'm just kind of burnt out with the wrestling and everything. And I've done my time. I'd rather concentrate on my efforts on things that could help my family instead of a pipe dream or a dream, or it's not reality. I'm not going to go down that road anymore. You know, I did that, you know, a few years ago, and it's just, it didn't really pay off for me. So, you know, and everybody says, yeah, you own the rights to the UWF and everything. Well, yeah, I kind of did, but I don't want that anymore. And I don't want, you know, that type of responsibility. So I'm just kind of laying low. I'm doing a couple of, you know, signings here and there, not too much. You know, most of the people kind of really forgot about, you know, myself and, you know, the UWF and all that. And that's good. But, you know, it's part of my history. It's in my DNA. I love the business. I'll never get out of that business, you know. But if somebody wants to book me and Steve Ray, I'm all for it. You know, I'll do it, but, you know, I'm not going to do it for free. You know, my time is worth money, and so is Steve's. So if they want to book us, you know, give us a plane ticket, get us transportation to and from the arenas and a place to stay, and, you know, come up with a little compensation package. It doesn't have to be much, but, you know, take care of the boys, and the boys will take care of you.
Amen. Great. Amen.
Yes, I was going to say, great advice, and something that I've heard many times before in my fandom and in my life. And it's all about taking care of those individuals, those men and women who put it all on the line inside the squared circle.
Well, it's always, you know, it's a golden rule, guys. It's, you know, treat everybody the way you want to be treated. That's the way I've lived my life. That's the way I've done it in the pro wrestling business. I don't have any enemies that I know of in the business. I might have one or two that maybe I potated or something, or maybe hit too hard and I didn't get a receipt, or maybe somebody hit me too hard and I didn't give them a receipt. But, you know, I left it in the ring, and it's only business, and accidents do happen. But I can honestly say I never tried to hurt anybody, and I don't think I've ever hurt anybody in the ring. And I take great pride in that. But, you know, it goes a lot more so as, you know, be kind to people, treat people nice. Don't, you know, abuse people because you have a little bit of power or you think you have power. You know, we all got to live together here on this planet. And, you know, it's just as easy to be nice to somebody as is being mean to someone. So always try to take the high road, always try to pay it forward, give back a little bit if you can. You know, you don't have to be a Rockefeller to help a feller. You know what I'm saying? So in the greatest nation, remember this, guys, is the donation. So it's the Christmas time. Donate if you have a little bit of extra. Talk nice to people. If somebody's down, you don't know what problems they're going through. Always treat people with respect. Give respect, you get respect. So that's the way I was taught. That's the way I was grown up. My parents, I think they raised me pretty well. I try to pass that on to my children, my grandchildren. And it's just about being humble. I mean, yeah, I got to see the world. I got to wrestle almost every major star in every territory, everywhere in the country and around the world. And I'm very humble, you know. And some guys, they think who they are, they get the big head, they win a belt, they get a little push, and then 5 years down the road, they're homeless, or they've been divorced, or they get in a car accident. You know, God forbid, you know, God doesn't like ugly. And if you could treat people nice and with respect, give the respect, get the respect, take time to sign that autograph for that little kid. If somebody wants my autograph, I'm not charging somebody for an autograph. You know, I think it's a privilege and a pleasure to give my autograph. You know, it's an honor. You know, so I'm not one of these guys that's going to hold somebody up and say, you know, I got to get $20 for an autograph, or you got to pay me $1,000 to appear somewhere. You know, I'm not that guy. You know, I'm very fair. And, you know, that's how you have to be in business. You know, you give a little, you get a little.
All right. With that being said, go ahead, Sonny Beast. Did you have something else you want to say?
I just want to thank you guys for your time. It's great what you guys are both doing. I respect that. Hey, if you have a dream and if you could live out your dream, and always reach for the stars, you know, and don't ever let anybody tell you can't do anything. You know, it's always about respect. It's always about giving back. And it's always about being fearless. You know, if you don't take a chance, you'll never know if you could succeed. And don't ever let anybody tell you you can't do something, because you can do anything you set your mind to, because I actually did that and I lived my dream. So, and if I die tomorrow, I've lived a good life, you know, so I'm thankful for all that God's given me and my family. And I'm thankful that I'm still here on this planet when so many of my other friends and coworkers aren't here anymore. So I thank God every day, and tomorrow is promised to no one. So live each day to the fullest and enjoy your lives, guys. And take care of your families and friends. That's all we got.
Well, Sonny, I got to say, even though Dr. Death, Steve Williams, wore this belt, I got to say, you are a true champion.
This well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, Gino. I thank you guys for having me on your program tonight. And happy holidays to you and your families and to all the wrestling fans out there. God bless each and every one of you, and happy new year. 2024 is going to be a great year for everybody, and just keep your heads up.
And thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule as well to sit down and chat with Gino and I. Really do appreciate it. And folks, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, Gino and I are here. We just finished talking to Sonny Beach, and Gino, that was a blast. I mean, what I said at the end of the interview was absolutely true. I love when I get to talk to somebody and I learn something about them that I thought I knew everything. I thought I did, and so that was so cool. What'd you think of our conversation with Sonny Beach?
I thought it went very well, and I really enjoyed being a part of it. And I learned things about Sonny that even I had never known. And me and him are friends, and I had never known a lot of the things that he had said. So this was an eye-opening experience for me as well. And I want to thank you for having me on to sort of not only interview him a bit, but also just sit by the sidelines and hear all these great stories.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know what? I thank you for, you know, I reached out to you because I've been seeing, you know, on Facebook and on your social medias that you've been doing a project that actually we didn't even get to talk about. So let's talk about that project real quick. You're actually transferring some UWF shows to DVD, correct?
I do have some old UWF tapes that were released back in the day from Best Film and Video Corp. These were released around 1992, and they're basically compilations of the best of the UWF, and I've transferred some of those. And as far as what I'm doing with the UWF, well, I had gotten the idea, you know, to, you know, say, you know, let's bring back some of these old-time matches from the UWF's history. And initially just started on my Facebook page, me uploading a match and sort of doing host segments for them, you know, saying, you know, hello, wrestling fans. This is Gino Cuddy, and I welcome you to another UWF Gold and Oldie, you know, and I call them UWF Gold and Oldies, and they're essentially, you know, old-time matches from the glory days of the Universal Wrestling Federation as founded by Herb Abrams. And I've uploaded stuff like Bob Backlund versus Ivan Koloff at Beach Brawl in 1991, and stuff like Kent Patera versus Billy Jack Haynes, Cactus Jack versus Jimmy Superfly Snuka at Blackjack Brawl. You know, these are matches that people may have seen before, But, you know, watched on their own, I think that they're great. And so I do have a page for that. It's called Universal Wrestling Federation. I upload matches there. The next one, I guess I'll give you a peek behind the curtain here. The next match that I'm going to be pulling out from the archives is the title match, because I just got in the mail today from eBay. I got a replica of the Sports Channel, UWF Sports Channel Television Championship belt. And so I think the next match that I'm going to pull out of the UWF archives is that title match at Beach Brawl between Dr. Death Steve Williams and Bam Bam Bigelow, which was one of the best matches in UWF history, and was on its own was a great match in and of itself. So I'm every few days I'm uploading an old match and doing host segments of it in the spirit of the old UWF Fury Hour shows. And I also compiled a show featuring footage from a UWF television taping that never made it to television called UWF Rampage. It took place at the South Dakota State Fair. No, actually the North Dakota State Fair, excuse me. It took place in Minot, North Dakota. And Zugs Rift, who was a manager for the UWF at the time, had sold this video package online. And so I'm taking some of the old video footage. I've taken some of the old video footage and edited it down to what a UWF Fury Hour would have looked like had these went to air on Prime Ticket, which was the channel that they were airing on at the time after they had left Sports Channel America. So I did that. I did the UWF Golden Oldies. Now, look, I realize, and I want to state this up front, that I know that the UWF and Herb Abrams in particular have their fair share of detractors and people who poke fun at it and everything else. But, you know, if you really look, you know, for the hidden gems in the UWF and everything, I personally love the UWF and I enjoy a lot of the wrestling that I've seen on the programming. And I think that there are some hidden gems that have gone underappreciated. And Herb Abrams, I mean, if you read the story, Torch and Ambition, the story of Herb Abrams and UWF written by my friend Jonathan Plombin, which I helped with, and I'm actually listed in the acknowledgments of that book. I want to say here that if you read that story, Herb Abrams was a much more complex individual than just a crazy, bonkers, you know, drug-addled, you know, wrestling promoter. He really was a compassionate man who maybe got in over his head, you know, but he was still, at the end of the day, a human being, you know, who lost his life tragically. A family had to bury, you know, a nephew, a son, you know, a spouse, you know. They still had to bury, you know, a loved one that day. And, you know, people did love him. I mean, he wasn't loved by everybody, but people did really love Herb Abrams, and he was a good guy at his core, even though he led that extravagant lifestyle. You know, he really was a good guy at his core, and getting to know his family and everything else has been a really good eye-opening experience. And I want to, again, thank, you know, Sonny Beach, Steve Ray, Josh Duge, Steve Simon, and the late, great David Sigmund for accepting me on, you know, as, you know, and welcoming me with open arms, you know, with my UWF fandom. So thank you to them. But yeah, it's my hope that with what little I'm doing, that I'm keeping the memory of Herb Abrams and UWF alive, because if you look at it today, if the UWF were around today, they would still be putting out some pretty decent stuff. I mean, let's put the cards out on the table right now. It wasn't, you know, WWF level caliber stuff, but it was, you know, pretty decent stuff at the time, and a pretty good alternative product at the time. You know, let's really study the UWF and stop being snarky and pointing fun and pointing our fingers at it. Let's actually start really dissecting it and really seeing it for the product, quality product that it was. I mean, was a great continuity all the time? No. Were there a lot of disqualifications and whatever? Yeah. But it was still a fun show to watch. And a lot of my other friends, like my friend Peter Crawford, is a great photographer up in the Canada area. And my friend Nate Kruk, you know, can attest to this. You know, we all love the UWF. And I think it's great that there are still some fans of the UWF out there that are keeping this stuff alive, including myself.
Yeah. And you know what? Look, I always say this when, especially nowadays, you know, because you hear AEW versus WWE, look, there's great stuff happening on both those shows. There's also some bad stuff, but that's wrestling. That's how it is. It's always been that way where you can watch. I mean, there's never been, I'm sure, a card from top to bottom that was absolutely flawless. There was a mistake somewhere. There was a flub somewhere. There was a botch somewhere. But again, you watch wrestling, hopefully, because you're a fan of it, and you could take the good, you could take the bad, or stomach the bad, and move on and be entertained and whatnot. And so I think you are absolutely correct. There are some very good hidden gems in that library of the UWF, and people just got to just give it a chance.
Right. I mean, the Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Paul Orndorff feud was an underrated feud, in my opinion. I think that they had a good program. Unfortunately, a lot of their matches ended in DQ, but I think that they had a pretty good program running at the time. I think that there were some other good programs going on, like Wet and Wild's programs with like the Power Twins and Bob Orton and Cactus Jack, the various programs that John Tolles was involved in. And to attest to what you're saying, you know, about AEW and stuff, I mean, you know, I think that this was part of the problem, you know, as to the UWF's downfall is that, you know, I initially got angry a few years ago, and I might alienate a lot of people by saying this, but I got angry a few years ago when Xavier Woods of The New Day said that wrestling fans are entitled babies. But I was initially angry at that, but over the years and what I've seen on social media and the internet wrestling community, I've discovered that a lot of people in the wrestling community are toxic because, you know, one of the things is, you know, the UWF was really never given a chance to grow because a lot of people just looked upon it with disdain. And I think a lot of people are doing the same thing with AEW and the newer revitalized NWA and TNA Impact and all this. You know, I mean, you should just be happy that there's more wrestling out there to enjoy, you know, and the fact that AEW as a company has only existed for a short amount of time. You know, I mean, it's like an apple tree. You know, if you plant a seed and soil, you can't expect an apple tree to all of a sudden bloom in a day. You know, you got to give this seed a chance to grow. And, you know, should Tony Khan be doing some of the things that he's doing? No, I don't agree with a lot of the things he's doing, but he's a very enthusiastic wrestling promoter. And he's trying to provide the best wrestling that he know, that he can, much like Herb did. And, you know, you just got to give that seed a chance to grow, I think.
Yep. And well, with that, Gino, we're getting a little bit long here. Just real quickly, plug again where folks can watch your UWF stuff.
I'll provide John a link in the show notes, and I'll just direct people. It's a Universal Wrestling Federation. You can find it on Facebook. There's a picture of Steve Ray in the ring as the cover photo and the UWF logo as the profile picture. And you can find all the UWF gold and oldies there. And if you want to find me in other areas, you can locate me on my Facebook, facebook.com/officialGenoCuddy. That is GenoCuddy. And I'm on Twitter at officialGenoC. I'm on Instagram at officialGenoC. And I also write a column called Western Wednesdays for a website called Cinema Craze, which is cinema-craze.com. So there's really no shortage of ways that you could find me online if you want to connect. And I want to, you know, extend a thank you for, to John for allowing me to come on this program. It was a really fun experience. And John, go ahead and plug your stuff now.
Well, you know what? I'm going to plug my stuff in just a few moments here. I just wanted to kind of wrap things up here with you and Gino again. Thank you for helping me with this interview. I appreciate it. You were a fantastic guest host. And you know what, man, you're welcome for coming on, you know, and hanging out. And I'm glad that you enjoyed talking to Sunny Beach as much as I did.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to swing on over here to the back half of my outro and tell you all the information that you need to know about the PVD cast. And I'll handle that business in just a few seconds. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Sunny Beach, talking about his career in pro wrestling. And I'd like to thank Sunny for taking some time out of his very busy schedule to sit down and talk with me. And I'd like to thank one more time Gino Cuddy for, again, encouraging me to reach out to Sunny, and also for being a pretty darn good partner on this episode as well. Let me tell you where you can get in touch with me in case you have a question about this episode or any episode of the PVD cast. Well, first of all, you can find me on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it these days My Twitter handle over there is at PVDMVP. You can also leave me a message over on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for at PVDcast. And you can even hit me up via email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. And maybe you want to let some folks know where they can hear this great podcast. Well, there's a bunch of avenues for that as well. PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and the best place to get every single episode. But if you fancy one of your podcasting apps or one of those outlets, that's fine too, because the PVDcast is available through all of those major podcasting outlets like Spotify, like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Audible, iHeartRadio app, Deezer, etc., etc. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting app, put PVDcast in the search bar. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And if you're using one of those podcasting apps, I need you to rate and review. Rating and reviewing pushes me up through the charts, and it lets those companies know that you're listening to my podcast. So please do that, and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. But there's a couple of other places where you can hear this great podcast, and one of them is every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page of the PVDcast. And once again, that address is at PVDcast. I do a little live broadcast, so that's one easy way to hear every single episode. And the PVDcast is even available through CROC Radio, Croc Radio, out of Kimberley, British Columbia. Every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can hear the latest episode. All you got to do is Google Croc Radio, and it'll pop up. Click on the link, and then enjoy not only the PVDcast, but all of the great music and programming on CROC Radio. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once more for checking out this episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.